Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to my podcast, Introverted Queen. On today's episode, I am speaking with Della Fonte. She is an anti-Black racism educator and an equity consultant who loves meaningful connections with people. We talked about being introverted in the workplace, her work as an educator, and she shared the two people who have been the most influential in her life. Check it out. Hi, Della Fonte.
Hi, Cindy.
How are you?
I'm doing fabulous. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to talk with you today.
Me too. Let's start. So how would you describe a young Della Fonte?
Oh, that's such a great question. And to be honest, when I think about the younger version of me, she was cute. I'm not gonna lie. She was cute in her own way. She was cute. But I tend to kind of split the experience into halves, right? So when I think about the younger version of me, I can't help but think of how I was perceived versus who I knew myself to be. And that at times there was a disconnect, and it took me a long time throughout my journey to figure out why there was a disconnect, right? And especially when it came to certain characteristics. So I guess very quickly, I'll start with, based on feedback, based on reactions, based on just comments I heard when I was a child, I'll describe how I believe I was perceived, and then I'll describe who I knew myself to be intrinsically, right? So I remember kind of growing up hearing comments of, you know, that she's friendly, you know, and she's like a really helpful child, opinionated at times, which is okay. I was called stubborn. That's fine. but I was, you know, I was happy. I was a thinker. I was kind of really bright and studious for my age is what I was told. I was very creative, but I was also reserved. I kind of kept to myself at times, and, you know, which wouldn't be too surprising, but what was a bit of a juxtaposition is other individuals would not describe me as that, others would describe me as extroverted. And so based on their interactions with me, so I got a combination of all of that in terms of perception. I still hear that today when I run into people who knew me as a child, but in terms of how I would describe myself as a child and growing up, I was quiet, right? I was quiet. I was humble. I was definitely introverted at my core, 100% introverted at my core. I knew I was different and unique. I was a night owl, could never go to sleep at night on time. So I was always ridiculed for that, but sorry for another day. I was a very curious child, asked a lot of questions. I was creative. But I was also a very empathetic soul, and I valued connection with others. I valued authenticity. I could kind of see through and read people very well, even if I didn't know that's what I was doing. I was very sensitive and often misunderstood for that sensitivity. But that's part of, I guess, the genuine nature that I've always had. But then on the flip side, I was always an advocate, and really? I was always an advocate, even to the point where in my yearbook, I believe in junior high, you know, when your fellow students and classmates write, you know, how they would describe you. Well, beside my name, they said, you know, she always stood up for people. She always stood up for those. So I was always someone who championed kind of not only doing the right thing, but making sure people feel seen and heard. I was super against kind of any kind of any kind of bullying. And this is me, the same age as my peers, right? But like people, I remember people would run to me on the playground if someone was picking on them. I'm not a teacher, right? But I was someone who was always an advocate to be like, oh no, not on my watch, you're not going to do that, you know? So it was interesting because unless I would go back and hear some of these stories or see it for myself, I realized I was always that person. Mm-hmm. And then finally, I was always kind of a leader, and I knew that. And sometimes people saw that in me, but it took, I think, a little bit of time in my development to recognize that in myself, because I was just being myself. I love sports. I was really active. I played, you know, basketball and ran track and, you know, played soccer. But I had the really unique juxtaposition, because I was always a fashionista, honey. So give me that little frilly dress. You know what I mean? My lip gloss is cooperative. Give me those little heels that I can't walk in, and you got me, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was a unique child. We'll just put it that way.
Definitely. And I love it. It's the introvert who did not like injustice. That's how I see it, the way you describe it. So that's awesome.
Absolutely. Yes.
So how has being introverted been for you in the workplace?
So, you know, when I think about that experience, it's quite a weighty one, because stemming from my childhood and kind of navigating different spaces as I grew older, going through my experience at school as an introvert, as well as moving into the corporate world, the reason why I think I started our conversation today with kind of splitting the perception of me versus who I really knew myself to be in spaces either A, I felt comfortable, or in some senses when I was allowed to, it was that battle, that internal struggle, continued on with me throughout my formal education days and throughout entering and being in the corporate world, where there was a perception of me, and then there was a little bit of the reality of me, and I was fighting to get, you know, those authentic characteristics out, and just I never always knew how to do that, right? Mm-hmm. And so what that caused, and being introverted, was one of those characteristics that I was struggling to own, because at some points in time, I didn't even realize that I was introverted. I can look back and say that I was introverted now. Right. But if you had asked me at the beginning of my journey, especially my corporate journey or even my childhood, if I was introverted, I don't know if I would have said that I was. For many years, I identified, even after doing some personality tests, as an ambivert, like one of those rare people that's right on the cusp. Mm-hmm. And I did that test multiple times, and I always kind of got that response. You know, later on, if you were to ask some of my fellow corporate peers, they would be like, oh, no, she's an extrovert, because I tended to hold roles that were social. So I was in human resources consulting for a while. I was a practitioner for a while. I was in organizational development for a while. I was an educator, a trainer. So I was always kind of with the people, doing things for the people, mm-hmm. Of organizations. So I could understand why people would think I was extroverted. Mm-hmm. But of course, I'd go home and crash and want to hide and be in the corner, and I was burnt out. I was like, nobody talked to me. I don't want to even answer the phone, you know, and that was the reality and I had to recharge. And that was the reality of kind of who I was, even though that didn't always come out in my environment in the workplace. And so my struggle was, how do I bring out who I really am at my core, so that I can be my best self on a regular basis, so people can see that without necessarily having to shift into an extroverted state for survival? And I feel like as I reflect on my life has been, I guess, a journey of me being very introverted, but having to turn on an extroverted persona to survive in most of our spaces in this world. Mm. And that's been exhausting. Of course. Now, it's a skill that I've learned, mm-hmm. right? It's a skill that I've learned, and a skill that has allowed me to fare well in different spaces, but I realized that I was getting burnt out on a regular basis. Mm. And that's the part that a lot of people didn't see, because I was being expected to show up as somebody that I wasn't, and very frequently, just to be able to fit into the roles that were prescribed to me. And my true nature, me at my core, that's the opposite of my value system. So that's also what led to some of these burnouts, where I really champion being who you are. Mm-hmm. I champion uniqueness. I champion differences. I champion I absolutely am anti-sameness, right? Like we live in a world that has these social norms and expects mm-hmm. you to live by status quo. And this is what, you know, we expect of you. And I'm at heart a rebel. Okay. And I've always been a rebel. I'm always going to be a rebel. Right.
Yes.
So the rebel's always in me, you know, mm-hmm. you have that, you know, image of like, you know, the back in the day, the Kermit the Frog, right? You have the Kermit the Frog with the hood, and you have the regular Kermit the Frog, and you have like two different, you know. So, and I'm not saying my rebelliousness was the Kermit the Frog with the hood. I just really had, you know, the characteristics within me mm-hmm. that knew that I never fully fit into these environments that really just want to create a mold and expect a lot of people to just fit into that mold. And it was draining me and it was wearing me out. And I'll give you one example of my battle kind of in the workplace that as an introvert, that maybe some of you, like you, maybe some of your listeners might be able to relate to. And it's something that I've kind of championed a little bit behind the scenes and then got a little bit more vocal, was the concept of an open floor workspace environment, mm-hmm. right? And so this became very popular in the last, you know, 20 years. It's been around for quite a while, but like really, really popular, mm-hmm. right? That it became the norm, right? Mm-hmm. No closed offices, everything's open.
Yes.
And for me as an introvert, and because I'll add to the complexity of who I am that I'm absolutely unapologetic for, I'm not only an introvert, and I would say really far on the spectrum of introvertedness, if now that I realize who I am at my core, but I'm also highly sensitive, right? Mm. And what I mean highly sensitive for people that don't understand that, and forgive me if I don't have the exact definition, but really it's speaking to about 10% of the population, so it's a small few of us, that our nervous system is highly sensitive. We receive things that are more, the way we receive information and stimuli is more intense than the average person, than 90% of the population. Mm-hmm. And I'll give two quick examples of this. So for many years, I kind of knew there were some differences about me that unfortunately often got ridiculed about or people didn't understand, but I couldn't help. It was just part of who I was. And I knew that they were a gift, but most people didn't understand it as being a gift. They would think of it as a hindrance, or you're just being extra, you're just being sensitive.
Right.
And one is the example of, say, for example, I was always the friend or family member who ruined all of the group shots, all of the group photos, because I was always blinking, right? Like my eyes are so sensitive mm-hmm. to light. That as an automatic reaction, I blink. Right. And even if I know that it's going to flash and it's going to flash bright, I'm still going to blink. Mm-hmm. Even if I try to like, you know, open my eyes as wide as possible, I'm still going to blink, mm-hmm. right? And for so many years, I would get teased about it, but I really couldn't help it. And then it was until later that I realized that I was highly sensitive. And one of the realities of being highly sensitive is some people can take a photo and the flash doesn't bother them. For me, it's really really bright, right? Mm-hmm. And so my body's always going to react to that. And it's the same thing with sound and with noise. You know, people can have, you know, noise in the background. And for me, I'm like, what's that? And it's like,
yes.
You know, hear every little pin drop. And so it's just the attention to detail. But when something is painful, it's really painful. Somebody might say you're overreacting, but like, you don't understand. It's really painful. Mm-hmm. But then also the same thing with energies, and the list goes on and on, right? And so things just tend to overwhelm us more, and it causes us to need more. We have more of a need to recharge, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's just we're on 10.
Yeah,
people can go through the day with this, and we're always on 10, right? So being introverted combined with being highly sensitive, and little food for thought that I learned is that anybody can be highly sensitive, but introverts tend to be more highly sensitive than extroverts. So there's a lot more of a likelihood that if you're introverted, you also you're more prone to be highly sensitive. I won't give all the science behind that because I'm not a scientist, but I just wanted to throw that out there too. And then I also have one of the rarest personality types, if not the rarest. I identify as an INFJ. So with all of those things combined, I'm like, okay, this girl's just different. You know what I mean? You know, so with all of that compounded, me being in an open floor plan work environment where I can hear every single noise and I can hear every single conversation, and I'm the type of person that when I need to concentrate, I need silence. When I'm in my creative space or my creative zone, like, I really need to be able to shut out the world, all of those things, you know, hearing the phone ring, seeing people walk by, it was totally the opposite of being conducive to what I needed to do to thrive mm-hmm. in those environments and really kind of bring my best forward. Now, bringing that up without A, at the time, having the language to be able to articulate what's going on yeah. with me, I didn't have at the time. I just mm-hmm. knew just like, this is hard for me, yes. right? Most people couldn't understand that, right? Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you know, putting forward requests to say, you know, can I work in a quieter space? Can I potentially work from home? Way before it was normalized like it is today, was also a struggle for more archaic environments where it was like an absolute no. And so it really showed me that often, you know, these corporate spaces traditionally are built for extroverts, absolutely. Right? And we know that as introverts. Mm-hmm. And it's also just one additional hurdle to have to jump over. But for me, it was something that I had to constantly battle. And it was one more thing that drained my energy every day. And it was one more thing that kind of took away from me being able to present myself with, you know, excellence or greatness on a, you know, on a consistent basis. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I remember I ended up being a champion. At least I at one point in time worked for a workplace that was way ahead of the curve and allowed a lot of their staff to work from home. This was about 15 years out, so when it wasn't really popular to do that. And I remember having this conversation with friends and family. Oh, you work from home? That would drive me crazy. I would be so bored. I need a social interaction. And I'm like, I'm in heaven. I'm in heaven. This is amazing. This is great. No fantasy. Yeah. I can get my work done. I can crunch numbers if I have to. I can do whatever it is. And again, just another example of people not quite understanding how some of us navigate this world or what the experience is, maybe being a little bit more introverted, having to be in this world that wasn't really designed well for us. And so I ended up just kind of being that champion for people behind closed doors when I was in meeting rooms and spaces and working with other leadership to really advocate for those who not only maybe had the same challenges I do, but just had a different experience and mm-hmm. just had and move through life in a different way, and to be empathetic and sensitive and compassionate to that, but also create solutions for individuals like us. So that's just, I can give you a million examples, but that's just kind of one that came to mind. And it was actually great, despite, you know, the state of the world right now, that of course is not good for so many reasons. Yeah. The flexibility that was finally achieved, albeit by force, to allow people with the flexibility to work from home or have different spaces or different environments to get the same thing done.
Yeah.
I actually very happy to finally see it, because there was, even if it was just a small percentage, there was a number of people that were being unheard for so long. And I was included in that bunch that finally was able to get what they needed, but also the world was able to see there are different ways of being able to get things done or of doing things mm-hmm. that we didn't have to all do the same thing. Right.
Exactly.
You know, it shouldn't be rocket science, but for so many years, just advocating and playing for that case seemed to be just so hard for people to mm-hmm. be able to receive.
No, it's very true. And it's like, now that people are realizing this, they're getting on board and they're like, oh, maybe this open concept office isn't for everybody. Who would have thought? And it's like, yeah, well. Yeah.
We're different in so many other different ways. You think this might not be like the best for everybody too?
Exactly.
So, and again, like, there are positives, as we know, with that environment. I'm just saying, and there's times where it was beneficial for me as well. I'm not like completely anti it, but I'm more for options. Mm-hmm. Right?
Absolutely.
And not a one size fits all solution for everybody. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, very true. Have you ever felt underestimated at work, and how did you deal with it?
Wow. I pretty much will say all the time. Mm. all the time. And this is sometimes it's hard to identify the reason that I feel underestimated or I felt underestimated at work, because there are so many different identities that overlap and intersect that sometimes we don't know if one, you know, bias against an identity is this a cause of it, or it's a combination, or it's just something different altogether. And what I say, it could be my introverted nature that, you know, someone thinks that I'm not capable, but it also could be my intersection of being a Black woman, right? Mm-hmm. Or my age, or it could, there's so many things that can contribute to why I might be underestimated in my work environment. But I definitely know that the more identities that intersect and overlap, that unfortunately has stigmas attached to them, lends to me being underestimated more frequently, if I can say that. And I think that's something that, again, is a conversation that isn't had enough.
Right.
That, which is why I always say, even in my work and the work that I do in the community, that no two individuals will ever have the same experience, right? Everybody can be in the same environment, but no two individuals will have the same experience. And so I'm thinking about, you know, one example when I was like, you know, really young, a teenager, you know, working towards, you know, getting through university, trying to kind of get my little coins, right? And I was working as a cook in a restaurant at the time. And I loved that job. It was great. I learned a lot. But I realized that at the end of the day, I gotta save some of this money for school, for my tuition. And unfortunately, I wasn't making enough in that role. And I had some friends that were servers that made like double what I was making for the same amount of time. And I said, well, I have to be efficient. I'm a smart cookie. I realized if I only got 5 hours to work today, I need to make the most that I can in those 5 hours. And so I realized what I needed to do was start serving instead at that point in time, so that I can, you know, get the income that I needed. And I realized very quickly after putting that request and multiple times, despite my very high performance and my tenure at that organization, at that company, I was there for many years, that I was constantly told no. And I couldn't seem to understand why I was being told no, because I knew that I was a social person. I knew that I was well-liked. I knew that my performance was great. I knew that I was definitely smart enough. Like I can bring out a tray of food and count money. Like it was a rocket science, right? You know, I couldn't really understand, and till this day, I don't know all the factors, but I do know that I was constantly passed over, and it became very frustrating because I would see new people be hired that really didn't have a greater skill set than I did, but they were given that opportunity. And so I realized that I had to make some decisions after a while, and that felt pretty frustrating. And I don't know if part of my, you know, my gut at the time was thinking that maybe they thought I wasn't social enough because I was kind of pretty quiet, just kind of did what I needed to do at work, etc. And maybe that was the introversion that they were having a bias around during that time. And then I'll fast forward to later in my life when I was working for an organization as a consultant, and I had to go over some reports with one of our clients. And I had a meeting scheduled with the president of the company to do that. And this was normal practice for me, you know, working with all levels of leadership within organizations. And it was a professional corporate role, and I would have to go to their office and meet with them, sit down with them, go over some numbers and go about my way. And I remember walking in one day, going to reception as I usually do. And, you know, before I can even get a word out, the receptionist says to me, oh, are you here to clean the toilet? And I was like,
what?
I said, no, I'm here to meet with, and the person's name, which she knew, I knew she knew, of course, Cleary is the president of the company. And for me, I was taken a bit aback, and of course, not surprised. Right. And at that point, I was a little perplexed because I'll give you the full example. Okay, I had a business suit on. Okay,
that's what I'm thinking.
I had heels on. I had a briefcase. Like, I don't know what screams that I'm walking in, and that's the first function that you would associate for the reason why I was kind of coming in. And so I literally had to repeat myself to her twice. And I said, well, perhaps if you call, you know, the name of, you know, this individual, they would confirm that we have a pre-arranged appointment and they're expecting me, right? And so I would love to say that that only happened once. It actually, situations like that happened to me repeatedly throughout my corporate career, unfortunately, because, you know, there was not only a bias and a stereotype, but, you know, this underestimation of what I present myself, who I am. Right. I can't possibly be, you know, filling a particular role or having, you know, or having a certain skill set. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I was, you know, constantly experiencing as I kind of moved through my career journey, that not only the face probably doesn't match, but even prior correspondence, because it got better, because even walking in after that incident and walking in to sit with that president that I had only been meeting for the first time in person, but had corresponded with many times over phone and email, definitely wasn't expecting me to walk in those doors. Let's just put it that way. And I always laugh because they say, despite people's their greatest intentions, sometimes we forget as humans that, you know, reactions, we can see each other's reactions. You might not be able to see what your face looks like,
right? But I can see it. Yeah.
But I know what your initial reaction is, right? And so no matter what your words say and how you try to pretend you're not, you know, surprised, or that, you know, you don't have an issue, or you know, there's not a surprise here, I can see on your face kind of what, you know, your bias, right?
And your body language too. Your face, your body language screams before you start saying anything anyways, right? So
100%. So that's a consistent experience. And I still experience that today. I hate to say I've gotten used to it, because reality is I don't like to normalize those things. But what I can say is, in terms of how I deal with it, how I approach it, it was definitely eye-opening in my younger days, because, you know, sometimes you can be a little bit naive in terms of how the world perceives us, especially when we know our abilities and our aptitude and our skills. But what I've chosen to do is not to allow it to, A, of course, change who I am. If anything, I walk with my head higher.
That's right.
I walk even taller. I own exactly who I am. And I said, well, even if I'm the only example that you see, right, about my skills, my talents, my gifts, taking this form and this shape, right, showing up differently to what you expect, then let it be the best example you've ever seen, right?
Exactly.
And that's kind of the example that, or the way that I choose to kind of navigate those situations. But feeling underestimated, unfortunately, is the norm. And, you know, I know some people will say, you know, I just use that as more motivation and more, I don't know, more of a drive to kind of prove people wrong. I don't see it the same way. I don't owe it to anybody to prove anything to anyone.
Exactly.
I am happy with who I am. If you see my value, you see it. If you don't, you don't. That's not a me problem, that's a you problem, right?
Exactly.
And I'm going to show up how I show up. I'm going to own the space that I'm in. I'm going to thrive in any environment that I possibly can. And I'm going to be the example of what I would like returned back to me, right? And that's how I choose to kind of show up in these spaces and navigate some of these challenges that I don't really owe anybody anything, but I'm going to show up as the best version of myself as much as possible and just go from there. So
Absolutely. That was a message right there. So you are an anti-Black racism educator. Tell me a little bit more of like what you do and what's a common myth that people have about your profession?
Okay. So, yes. So through my consulting firm, Azaria, and so I'm the founder of that organization, and that was kind of birthed or brought forth from a need that I was constantly seeing unmet in our society, in the spaces that I worked in, and the spaces that I worked with my community in. And I realized that there was a need for not only education, but healing. And what I've done is found a way to kind of merge the two and present that solution kind of in a form that was different from the ways that a lot of other individuals, consultants, educators, professionals are tackling social injustices, tackling the disharmony that we have as a human community. And so my organization approaches it in two separate ways. So one, I help organizations. So whether they're corporate, public, or even private organizations, or even just community associations, I work with them through a variety of different solutions to better understand the Black experience, right? Understanding that it's nuanced and it's complex, but it's also very beautiful, right? It's not one size fits all. There are many, many different types of perspectives and subcultures and all of these things that don't get addressed. And because they don't get addressed, we can't arrive at proper solutions to the issues and challenges we still face today, but we constantly are misunderstood and what in terms of getting our needs met. And so what I do is provide education around those experiences, give a platform for individuals to share their lived experiences and their perspectives from their own mouths, not from someone just telling us or sweeping us or painting us, I should say, all with the same brush, really just kind of giving a platform for individuals to learn and educate themselves, but also critically think, because I think that's often what's left out of so many of these conversations and these discussions, but also the actions that are needed as well to follow suit. And then second, and that kind of ties in, I also provide safe spaces and very specific safe spaces for members of the Black community to come together to exchange ideas, as well as have really tough conversations with each other. And this is a lot of where the healing aspect comes up as well, to talk about generational wounds and traumas and to try to get towards more healing around that, so that of course we can not only be our best selves, but we can really be we can really benefit from a sense of community that has been lost or that has deteriorated over the years. And so this platform gives or creates more of a supportive network, because often I've found in the spaces and the work that I've done, because I've been doing a lot of this work for many years, I've held roles as, a director of equity and diversity and all of those different things in different spaces and in a lot of, multinational organizations and big corporate firms and so many different spaces. And what I've noticed is, a lot of people don't like to talk about race. And right. They love to sweep it under the rug and think that, okay, well, if we just talk about gender, or if we just talk about age, or if we just talk, then that's enough. But they don't realize that for some of us in those rooms and in those spaces, the biggest sore point is the insidious ideology of racism and race in general. And if we don't address it and if we don't talk about it, it doesn't magically go away. That's right. Still there and we can address it, right? And not just address it for 5 minutes at the end of a conversation and hoping that,
right?
You know, or just, you know, or just again, thinking that there aren't nuanced, very specific differences between different racialized groups, or even different ethnicities, etc. So I realized if nobody's going to talk about it, I'm going to step up and talk about it. And I'm going to step up and create the spaces that I wish I had, or I wish people were giving a lot more time and attention to. And so as a combination of, you know, the framework that I've created through my consulting firm, and we do this through moderated conversations, we do this through workshops and seminars, we do this through so many different types of healing and community-based exchanges, that we're there to just really give a space to talk about those things that, for whatever reason, still gets pushed to the side, but is so necessary for us to be able to move forward and push forward, heal, and ultimately have a better quality of life. Now, I do provide anti-racism training in general, and a lot of the work that I do is called upon doing exactly that, where I, you know, advocate for all anti-discrimination in terms of from a racialized perspective, anti-oppression, et cetera. And I'm happy to do that work. But one thing I'm very key about when I do approach that work is it's not my place to speak for anybody, and it's not my place to represent anyone, especially with an identity that I may not have or I might not share.
Right.
So in those spaces, you're going to see me bring the lens of the Black experience, but because that's what I know.
Mm-hmm.
But I also open up room for individuals to bring their lived experiences so that we can not only dispel myths and stigma, you know, in those spaces, we all can be seen and heard. It's not saying, oh, you know, we want everybody to be seen and heard and feel like they belong and all the talk that I've seen for so many years, because I was doing this work way before it was popular,
mm-hmm.
right? Way before it was popular. It's gotten popular in the last few years, and definitely in the last year with, you know, more attention, and I'm grateful for it. But I was doing this work when people were like, you're a what? You're an anti-Black. Okay, I'm not going to touch her with a 10-foot pole because she probably just sounds like some angry Black lady.
Mm-hmm.
am I an angry Black lady? Sometimes, because I have every right to be Black lady.
Mm-hmm.
But is that my approach to the work that I do? No, because I know it's not conducive to the change. It's not always conducive, that approach to the change that I'm hoping for us to be able to get to. So very quickly, what are some of the common myths you asked about my profession? Yeah, outside of the angry Black lady, you know, stereotype. You know, just piggybacking on that for a second, sometimes people are a little bit hesitant because they probably think, okay, well, I'm going to bring her in for a session or for a talk or for a workshop or whatever it is. Is she going to come in here and yell at me or be some sort of tyrant or make it seem like, am I going to walk away crying for the next 5 days because I feel guilty about, you know, my place in society and all the rest of it? And the reality is, you know, that that's not me, first and foremost, right? But I also am not in control of how you perceive reality or how you perceive truths mm-hmm. or facts, right? That's for you to own individually, right? Yeah. I'm not responsible for any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do, the approach that I do take is I'm a true educator at heart. And I've always been that. It's interesting because when I was younger, as a child, I always wanted to be a teacher. But I wanted to be changed probably about 17 times in my life. But when I was really young, I always wanted to be a teacher. Didn't know later on in my life to kind of come back to the educational space, even though I always kind of hovered around it. As a passion, but then at the same time, my formal education as well is in Black history, Caribbean history, African history, Latin American history. So I also had that passion of advocacy and understanding, you know, the roots of global history. And so, you know, I'm going to diverge for one quick second to say that even my approach is, when I bring it up in my work and when I have these conversations, is if we don't know what has happened, if we don't know what what we've collectively experienced in history, then not, of course, not only are we doomed to repeat it, but we're going to keep spinning our wheels. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's a solution or an effort that's already been done. Right. And we think it's brand new because we don't even know mm-hmm. what happened 50 years ago or 100 years ago or 2000 years ago, right? So instead of learning from that and doing better, we tend to repeat and recycle. And that's why we've been having the same conversation for so many years, because a lot of people still don't understand what has happened in the past, what there is to learn from that, and the reason why the world is operating the way it is today. Mm-hmm. And so the niche that I fill is to help to fill that void of misunderstanding, misinformation, lack of understanding and information, and give it in a context that's easy and digestible to understand, and kind of connect the dots for those I engage with. And so I bring my love of education, I bring my love of history, I bring my love of understanding world history and the components like Black history that have been, and Caribbean history and African history and all those other types of history that have been left out of the larger equation of world history. Because I actually don't believe in separating histories. I say that just to give an example, but I believe there's only what happened and what didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And what we've been fed is only one part of the narrative. And often the narrative mm-hmm. is not even true, mm-hmm. right? And we've left out so many other parts of the narrative that are factual, that did happen, and that contribute to the wider picture. But without understanding that, we collectively don't understand why the world is the way it is today. Mm-hmm. And so I bring that to the conversation. And then most importantly, I just almost kind of give it to my participants. I give it to my learner and say, so now knowing this and having more tools and more understanding, what are you going to do with that? Mm-hmm. Right? Do you agree? Do you disagree?
Right.
Are you okay? Does this align with your value system? Mm-hmm. Does it not? Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't, what are you going to do about it? And right. So it's more of a self-discovery journey. And it's more, I guess, a platform for those to really be able to exercise the critical thinking skills that we all innately have, but are often underutilized. Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know, that those are some of the myths or challenges that I have to kind of, you know, work around with right. what I do. And, you know, all I can do is just, you know, put it out there mm-hmm. and just hope that, you know, someone, there's something that resonates with someone.
And
I found in my experience that a different approach to this is kind of just what we've been needing for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's funny because you're describing your work and all, and I go back to the first question, how would you describe your young self? And I'm like, almost everything that you said kind of makes sense in what you're doing right now. So I'm like, wow.
I'm so glad you pointed that out, because it's something that I share with some of the closest family and friends that I have, that I think the desire of so many is to be able to see a point in your life where you've come full circle. Mm-hmm. And I've always said, my journey is not to becoming someone. My journey has always been to return to exactly who I knew I was.
Right.
Always was, mm-hmm. right? And I my belief is that when we're born, and especially when we're children, young children, we are who we are. Like, that's yes. who we actually are. That's the most authentic we probably mm-hmm. ever were.
Yeah.
And what we've done is, unfortunately, been exposed to a lot of external stimuli and variables and factors and influences in our society that have caused us to do a few things. One, to have to feel like we have to integrate into a pre-existing set of norms, to a status quo that was already designed way before us, mm-hmm. to learn behaviors for survival that are against who we intrinsically are. And all of these different types of components that are shoved upon us so that we fit in, to a mold. Mm-hmm. And that we learn that as early as our earliest days of childhood. Every single time we're told no, not in a way for necessary or dire safety in the moment, but like, just don't be you in this moment, and don't be you in that moment, and don't be you in this other moment, or else society is going to be upset with you. And we're taught that constantly.
Yeah.
And what it does is move us further and further and further away of who we were ultimately designed to be and how we were ultimately designed to contribute uniquely to this world. It creates a society of sameness, which is why I'm very much against that, because it doesn't, sameness doesn't benefit us, right? Yeah. You know, so as a whole, right? And so I'm very happy, because I, many times throughout my journey, I was extremely discouraged that I'd ever be at this place.
Mm.
Very, and I think that's what led to many of the burnouts and all this stuff, because I was doing what I thought I needed to do. I was doing what I thought I was supposed to do
mm-hmm.
for so many years, but that's not who I was.
Right.
Or that was just a piece. It wasn't fulfilling. And I, when I started my career journey, said, okay, I'm really interested in history. Okay, but I don't want to work at a museum because I just don't want to. No offense to anybody who works at a museum, but okay, so what am I supposed to do with history? Okay. And specifically, my specialization in history is the Black experience. Okay, like, clearly there's 100,000 jobs out there for that. We know there's not. So
no.
What am I supposed to do with it, right? But I have a passion for people in advocacy and human rights and social justice. But again, what am I supposed to do with that?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know I'm a leader. So how am I supposed to lead with that? And there's the healing component of me that's really important. How am I supposed to do that? You know, and my career journey leading up to this point, I realized every single experience, even the toughest ones, even the ones I was the most miserable in, all added up and paved the way for me to do exactly what I'm doing now. Because I literally incorporate every single skill and talent that I've developed over the years to be able to contribute in this way, mm-hmm. right? And to deliver the services that I do and work with people the way that I do. So many times I was discouraged, thinking like, what am I doing this for? I'm so far away from what I want to do or think my purpose is and all this stuff. But I realized that it was only preparing me for this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and preparing me to be exactly who I was when I was a child.
Yeah.
But now I can be it freely. Now I can be it fully authentically.
Mm-hmm.
Now I don't have to subscribe to whatever people think I have to be.
Mm-hmm.
Now I don't have that pressure, because I'm not putting that pressure on myself. And even more so, I had to unlearn many things to get to this point. And I'm still unlearning. And I take pride in unlearning them, because, and I guess what I do is help people to unlearn some of those things that don't fare well for them as well, so that we can reach this sense of actualization, the sense of, I don't know, this inner peace
mm-hmm.
and this inner satisfaction that I think so many of us are looking for, but just don't know how to arrive at.
Absolutely. So. Purpose.
Exactly.
So who are the two people who have been the most influential in your life?
Without, okay, I'm going to give a tiny little disclaimer. If you're listening and you know me personally, and I don't, we will be upset because I love you, but in terms of, you know, like, this is not personal, right?
Yeah.
I really have to think about some of the greatest influences in my life that are constant. The first, and I see this very, very unapologetically, is who I define as my creator, which for me is the Most High, right? And I will specifically, if people, you know, may or may not understand, I refer to as Yahuwah, which is the Hebrew term for God, and Yahusha, which is the Hebrew term for Jesus. So that foundation in my life, that constant spiritual connection that I have, is really the foundation of my core values. And my core values is truly what motivates me to be who I am, to do what I do, to want to achieve greater and higher, that holds me responsible for how I show up in this world, even when, girl, sometimes I just want to cuss some people out because I have to wonder what's going on in their head, you know, or why they behave the way they behave. And I'm not saying I'm perfect, but like sometimes, especially when you do this work, you don't understand why people have so much hatred towards others. And it's sometimes hard to digest and deal with. But my faith is what keeps me in check. My connection, my relationship is what really keeps me grounded and is is the highest influence in my life to make sure that I am always striving to be the best version of myself. And I get for other people, it might be something else, but for me, that is really the core of, you know, I guess my identity and what makes me who I am. And then I would say runner up, second place, goes to my mother. I have a wonderful relationship with her and a wonderful connection with her. And I think she, for me, is the earthly example of a lot of those core beliefs kind of manifested in person. Everything from an example of love and motivation and support and understanding and strength and resilience and healing and forgiveness, but even my earliest forms of education, right? There's a lot that I've learned in my life, and I learned from that initial relationship. And so it's something that I definitely cherish. And regardless of our human nature, right? And, you know, we all go through highs and lows in our relationships with each other, but it really is kind of an anchor that helps me to remember, you know, who I am and, you know, what I'm here for, what my purpose is. Mm-hmm. And as a fellow introvert, my mother is, taught me how to own that, right? And how to not shy away from that, how to be proud of that, and how to definitely, in this extroverted world, not let that or anybody allow that to be a hindrance to my capability and my ultimate success, whatever that looks like. And so I'm very grateful for those two relationships that I have. And of course, you know, they're not the only ones. Just people in general, even animals, and I see how they interact with each other, or you know, little things, you know, they inspire me, and nature, and, you know, all so many different things inspire me and are influential to me. But ultimately, I think it's those two sources that really just kind of keep me grounded, in what I do and how I want to continue to approach, you know, my uniqueness, my introverted uniqueness in this world, right? So definitely grateful for those two influences. And I also feel like they have shown me how to own my responsibility of how I show up and the work that I do now and how that's going to impact not only the current generation, but future generations, right? And so that's something that I take quite seriously in terms of the legacy that those influences have left for me. Mm-hmm. What is the legacy that I'm responsible for leaving for the future? Will I be a good ancestor, right? Will I be someone that people can say was influential to them? And this is not for any kind of, you know, vanity or pride or ego, but more for the sake of, I know I have a responsibility that while I'm here to do my part as those before me have done theirs, so that I can have this platform, so that I can have these opportunity, so that I can have this voice that I have now. And and how am I going to take that same privilege and pass that forward so that, you know, future generations can build upon what has been built for me, right? That foundation that is set for me. So yeah, that would be it for me.
Well, Dolly Fontaine, thank you so much. It was lovely chatting with you.
Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. And I look
forward for us to have future conversations as well.
Absolutely. Take care.
All right. You too. Thanks.
That was such a great conversation I had with Dolly Fontaine. I hope you found it insightful just as much as I did. Don't forget to share this episode with a friend. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. And please subscribe. Follow me on Instagram at introverted_queenblog. Thank you so much for tuning in. Take good care. And until next time.